Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
I'm like, I still got my hands in the air. I say, no, I just got shot. And I'm standing there, I'm like, sir, why did you shoot me? And his words to me, he said, I don't know.
Charles Kinsey is lucky to be alive, speaking there from a North Miami hospital. A cop inexplicably shot him while he was trying to recover a mentally ill patient who had escaped from an independent living facility. Now, Kinsey joins the roll call of black men shot by white officers. In this case, at least, there is an explicit acknowledgement in the officer saying, I don't know, that there was no reason for that officer to have fired his gun. And yet he did, hitting Kinsey in the leg. There were reports of a weapon on the scene, but none was found. There goes another one. A glance at the headlines. What's it going to be now? Don't look at them. Just turn off the television. And you still wonder, in this summer of 16, what's next? Is there a valid escape, a pause of some kind, to find a bubble where things like this don't happen? Ambassador Dr. Susan Johnson Cook is a preacher, former NYPD chaplain, a former ambassador for international religious freedom under President Obama. She says we all need to find some kind of solace to retrieve our strength and find the common ground to roll up our sleeves and eventually solve these problems in our communities.
For me, I bring faith leadership into the conversation, and I think that's what's been one of the missing pieces, because we are on the edge, nationally, locally, and internationally. I mean, my position actually was really going into religious war zones and seeing that was the beginning of ISIS, you know, really our hearing about it and the beginning of the Boko Haram. And it's escalated to proportions we can't seem to control.
So you can find that solace even if you're that close to the violence.
Yes, I can. And you have to. I think that that's what makes the human spirit work, that you have to find the solace, not just in that one particular instance, but you have to find it often. So it's how you prepare to go into a situation. It's what you do after you come out of a situation. I was on the front lines of 9/11. New York City Police Department chaplain, had been 20-some years into the ministry, very well trained. We had not been trained for post-traumatic stress. Or a trauma, period. And here I was on the front lines with the smoke and the fire still happening. And firefighters who had been up all night trying to find their brethren and police officers trying to find their brothers and sisters. And I remember pulling over to the side of the highway and having to just stop in the midst of all of that and just have my cry, because I had to get it back together for me, so that I could be in a position to help others.
How should people who follow events, who maybe get very full of anxiety about what's going on in the world and feel so powerless, how can they step back from the emotional toll of events without losing the idea that I need to do something here?
That's a great question. You know, as you said, you have to step back. And so that in the midst of what's going on, whatever your place is, how you get into your zone, you have to stop, drop, and pray. Not feel that you are the responsible one or the fixer. Because when you go into a situation and you're not prepared and it's not your assignment, then that's chaos.
In these police shootings where people have a sense that somehow they are involved in the racial narrative, white or black, they have a role that maybe they don't want. How are we in that situation to step up without stepping away and escaping?
The events happening now, many of them with racial overtones, didn't just start, you know. So for this generation, many are just seeing it. I'm a mother of two African-American men, 21 and 24. We have what we call the talk, the prayer, and the cry. So when I was growing up, the talk meant you were going to have this talk about the birds and the bees. Now it's with your sons. This is what you're going to do if you're stopped. This is how you're going to carry yourself. This is how you're going to enter and exit stores and buildings and public places. And this is how you're going to carry yourself as an African-American man. Understand, though, you can be stopped while black, driving while black, living while black. Understand that. So that's the talk. The prayer is every time they leave my home, whether that's to go to school or to go out, I do the prayer. You know, God, I pray that my children will come back home and safely. And then it's the cry, because there is a moment that a mother gets the call. My oldest son was like, Ma, I was driving down a single lane highway, the same speed as everyone else. There was no other place to go, no place to go slower, faster, and I'm stopped. So that's the cry. These events didn't just happen, so we have to approach them in many respects. It's not wrong for people to emote. It is wrong for people to disrespect authority. It is wrong for authority to disproportionately disrespect and imprison brown and black men. So I think we have to get it in perspective, and there has to be leadership.
The way race manifests itself in the United States, it is a constant experience for African Americans. It appears to be an episodic experience for whites, in the sense that they understand that there's diversity, but they aren't as deeply entered in the experience in the form of vigilance that you describe with the call and the prayer. And I think whites are discovering, for good or ill, that their awareness of this needs to be dialed up. And they're entering into an experience that is unfamiliar, maybe fills them with a certain amount of anxiety. Am I responsible? Am I not responsible? How do I be responsible here in this experience that I'm entering, which is consciousness of privilege, understanding that that privilege may have had consequences even to my friends? How does that very different experience mix?
Well, the two things noted. When I speak, I say we as blacks. When you speak, you say they as whites. And that's a very interesting thing. But it is episodic, because there's so much happening right now in the news. But racism is not new. I mean, it happens on every level. I think if it takes these episodes to get the conversation going, sadly, then that's what has to happen.
Looking at all of these problems that mm-hmm. we're experiencing in the world mm-hmm. right now, are people to be faulted for wanting to get away from it all?
Well, not at all. I think that's healthy. People are very right to have a time of solace. And communities also need a time of solace, because we know we've got to gear up for some of the things that are happening.
Step back, pause, and strengthen yourself mm-hmm. for the hard work ahead.
Strengthen yourself for the struggle. You have to have those moments.
Does Obama do that?
He does.
In a good way? Is it tough for him?
I mean, when you're leading a nation and you're the most powerful leader in the world, it's probably tough. But, you know, the thing about solace is you take it without permission.
Well, Ambassador Dr. Susan Johnson-Cook, thank you very much.
It was my pleasure.
You've certainly given us some tools to find our various solaces.
And thank you for having this wonderful interview. I really enjoyed it, and I feel really at peace.
All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Dr. Susan Johnson-Cook is a former ambassador for international religious freedom, founder of the Pro Voice, Pro Vaz movement for women.